T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This hour is being brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS with a K, the number 4KIDS. My name is Lawrence Holmes, and I am here with you until Cubs baseball. The Cubs are in KC tonight. That's right. A little interleague action for you. I'm sure they went and got some barbecue on their road trip, all that good stuff. We will have the game for you starting at 6:40. I am here with you until then, and there is a lot of stuff on my mind. If you would like to be a part of the show, you can call us at 312-644-6767. If texting the show is more your speed, 670-11 is the way you can do that. You can follow me on Twitter. You're on Twitter, like, okay, here you go. At Lawrence W. Holmes. L-A-U-R-E-N-C-E. Like the saint. My name is spelled like the saint. So, at Lawrence W. Holmes is where you can find me. There and on Instagram. And I have a lot of pictures from my weekend in Canton and in Cleveland on Instagram, some videos of everything that went down there, and I want to spend some time talking with you about some of that stuff tonight. I also have a couple of baseball nuggets that you might find interesting. One from the White Sox Talk podcast that I thought was really interesting about Yoan Moncada, and Lynn Casper was on earlier saying something about Chris Bryant that I think you might find interesting as well. The crew tonight. Herb Lawrence is the executive producer of this fine program. Adam Studzinski, a.k.a. Studs, is in charge of the sound on the show. So, a few months ago, program director here, Mitch Rosen, said to me, hey, what do you think about going to Canton? And I said, "That I wasn't expecting this because I'm technically not a reporter anymore. So I said, that'd be cool. She said, do it. Like, you're going. Like, you covered Urlacher, you're going to go. I said, okay. And so then I wanted to try and cover it differently than the guy with the Marantz and when I first started working here as a reporter. And hopefully I did that. And I have a lot of stories about the trip that I wanted to bring back and share with you. I wrote a column on 670thescore.com about going there on Friday. I wrote it on the plane. On Thursday, and I wrote a column yesterday in the airport about Brian Urlacher's speech. I thought his speech was tremendous. Covered Brian his whole career. I was just reminiscing a little while ago about how the first time, it was either the first or the second time Brian was on the score, he was on WrestleManiacs with me and Jonathan. So, I mean, I've known this guy, at least from covering him, for almost 20 years. And Brian is never, I knew that the speech was going to be mostly him throwing bouquets to other people. I expected that because he hates talking about himself. And when I ran into him on the sideline on Thursday, you know, I congratulated him because I hadn't seen him. And I said, are you ready? And he goes, yeah, he's like, I'm ready to kind of get all this stuff over with. You could tell that there was some apprehension about giving the speech because that's not what Brian is known for, public speaking. I thought his speech was awesome. I thought that he gave of himself. I thought that he shared stuff about himself and his life that some of us in the know knew, but it's not something you would necessarily report. Some fans knew some of that stuff about Brian, but the thing that really struck me, well, there were two things. One, that in a space where we are there to celebrate the accomplishments of Brian Urlacher on the field, a place where he should feel most comfortable because we're just talking about Brian, the football player, that was the moment that he decided that Brian the person would come out. In the piece, I said it was like Superman turning back into Clark Kent. And I thought it was great. I thought that his approach to it was just awesome. And him sharing so much about his dad, that was the thing that got me. Because I was expecting him to not mention his dad at all. And had he done that, I don't think that anyone would have been like, oh, Brian Urlacher's a jerk, considering that he didn't have a great relationship with his dad. That message of forgiveness that he conveyed, of acknowledgement and forgiveness that he conveyed about his father, I thought was terrific. The way that he honored his mother, I thought was terrific. The way that he gushed about his children was terrific. And his latest wife, gushing about how important she was. And you can kind of connect the dots when he was talking about how important his stepdad was and how great of a stepmom his wife has been to his children. It's a hard job. And I know that you might be a stepdad or stepmom. Herb says it all the time. It's all of the headache and none of the credit. So it was cool to see him step up in that way and give credit to his stepfather who helped raise him. There was a portion that I wanted to play that is more germane to the Bears fan. That if you're uncomfortable talking about some of the family stuff, the football stuff and the football as family stuff, I thought was cool. This was Brian's section where he singled out some of his teammates.
So many coaches, teammates, and friends that have profoundly impacted my life, but time does not allow me to properly honor you. But I will talk about these couple of teammates that I had real quick. Mike Brown. Yeah. Oh, where'd he go? Sorry. Mike Brown and I were drafted in the same class. He is the smartest football player I've ever been on the field with. Even smarter than I am. I hate saying that. When he was in the game, it took a lot of pressure off myself. He communicated with the defense with his little squeaky-ass voice.
Hey, look, you better want to hear. Watch out.
I missed that voice. When he wasn't on the field, it hurt me and it hurt our defense. Lance Briggs. I played alongside this beast for 10 years. He made me a better player because if I didn't play well, he'd make all the plays and I'd just be a guy out there. He elevated not only my game, but the entire defense. His enthusiasm and excitement was contagious. We'll be back here in a couple years for your induction, big time. Charles Peanut Tillman. I had a front row seat for 10 years watching this guy piss people off by making them fumble, when all they worked on all week was not fumbling. He had a talent that I don't believe will ever be duplicated. He was also a great cover guy who would come up and hit your ass when he needed to. Alex Brown. Alex is one of the most contagious laughs I've ever heard. It rivals my mother's. He's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet, and it helped that he was a hell of a football player as well. I only played with this guy for 3 years, but Dusty Dvoracek impacted me greatly. Even as a rookie, he stepped in and took control of the huddle, and he held people accountable. If he saw something he didn't like, he'd shout, "Shut the blank blank up and listen." And as a rookie, that's pretty tough to do, but he did it. He set the tone for our defense. Olin Krutz. The toughest person I have ever met and one of the hardest working people as well. No doubt he was our team leader. OGK played his heart out. Injuries did not matter. He played through them. Olin was the best center in the league, and he made me a better player and competitor. We all looked up to you, Olin.
That's true, and that's from Brian's speech that's courtesy of Westwood One in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. The Mike Brown thing is hilarious because that's what those guys will talk about with him. Two things. He's the smartest. Three things. Smartest guy that they've played with, the squeaky voice, and his uncanny ability to return fumbles or interceptions for touchdowns. and the style that he used, which was to start in one direction, get the offensive lineman going in that direction, then cut it back. That was the key to Mike Brown's success. I knew that Bob Babich and Urlacher were tight. I didn't know that he had kind of become a surrogate father for Brian. And I found that out on the show last week. Charles Tillman had talked about it on the show. And it's clear that that relationship meant a ton to him. And there wasn't really a lot of conversation about Lovey. And I'm not sure why that is. I don't have a good answer or explanation for that. But Brian did talk about how coaches influenced him, and he said that there were too many to mention. So I'll take him at his word, and I'll leave it at that. I don't know if it's necessarily a diss. I just think that there were people that were closer to him and meant more to him than what Lovey did. And I don't think that there's any shame in that. You bond with who you bond with. And he clearly bonded with Bob Babich. And I saw Bob while I was down there, and he was excited. Like, they have this parade. The Hall of Famers get to go on a parade. And so they're sitting on top of convertibles, and Urlacher was there wearing a Peyton jersey sitting next to Babich. Like, he could have had that stage all to himself, and he chose to put Babich on that stage with him. So that's how much that guy meant to him. And I share his sentiments about Olin, too. It'll be interesting, like, his case is really... of the guys that you might think would go to the Hall of Fame, I think Olin's is the toughest. Not that he doesn't belong. It's just that center is a really difficult position, I think, for writers to quantify. I would put myself in that category. And in that era, so what do you have? You have Kevin Mawai, you have Dominic Raiola, you have Olin.
Jeff Saturday,
Matt Burke. And I mean, Olin is right there with all the Pro Bowls that he had, but I think his is the hardest case because I don't think the voters know enough about offensive line play. It's harder to quantify, which honestly speaks a little bit to Terrell Owens' point about how it's decided that people get into the Hall of Fame. I think there's a legitimate debate there. I think that a lot of the stuff that Terrell Owens said down in Chattanooga is legitimate. He shouldn't have had to wait 3 years. Arguably the second or third, depending on whether you like Moss or Owens better, second or third best wide receiver to live. And he had to wait because people didn't like him. And to me, that's whack. But I think that when it comes to buzzworthy and easily digested arguments about the possible players that are left from that Bears era to end up, Hilgenberg isn't even in the Hall of Fame, to end up in the Hall of Fame, I think Devin has the best easy argument to make. He's the greatest that's ever done it, period. And if you have a museum, you should have the greatest people that played the game. And he is the greatest return. There's no argument. There's no number two that you think. Like, there's no Jordan and LeBron. There's Devin Hester, period. So to me, I think that he has the easiest argument. I think that Charles's argument for getting into the Hall of Fame has become a lot stronger, because people now understand how important he was. Even if you didn't consider him necessarily a cover corner, you now understand that he took the ball away all the time. That whole defense was predicated with playmakers. It was just filled with it. Guys who understood how to take the ball away, and Charles was better than anyone at doing it. If you want to talk a little bit about this, if you have some thoughts, 312-644-6767 is the number. I had a couple of cool moments down in Canton that I'd like to continue sharing. I got some baseball stuff that I want to throw in here too, including something really cool that the White Sox are doing tonight. I'll share that with you next here on The Score.
Talking a little bit of Bears, going to throw in some White Sox, and of course some Cubs as they get ready to take on the Kansas City Royals tonight in KC. Here is your lineup.
Rizzo, the greatest leadoff hitter ever, batting first, playing first. Ben Zobrist will play second base and bat second. Jason Hayward will bat third and play right. MVP candidate Javier Baez will bat fourth and play third. Kyle Schwarber bats fifth and is DH. Wilson Contreras will catch and bat sixth. Ian Happ will bat seventh and play left. Addison Russell is at shortstop tonight. And since they're in an American League ballpark, no pitcher in the ninth spot. Albert Almora Jr. is in center field batting ninth. I've been hearing this. The reason why I said that about Javier Baez is this. This idea that, well, you know, Javier Baez could be an MVP candidate. Yes, yes. A guy with 24 home runs at this point in the season who looks like he has an outside shot of being a 30-30 guy. Yes, he is an MVP candidate. And there's no more debate about that. If the Cubs are going to win the National League Central or be a wild card team, a big reason behind that has been the play and the growth of Javier Baez. So we could stop with all of the think pieces. Does it make sense for Javier Baez to be an MVP? Yes. The answer is yes. That's it. We don't need to discuss it. He's done everything you wanted him to do and more this year. He's been one of the best players in the game this year. So no one should be surprised that Javier Baez is an MVP candidate. We're in August now. This isn't a discussion that we had about, you know, what he was doing in April and May. It's August. The season's almost over. And he's putting up tremendous numbers. So, yes, Javier Baez is an MVP candidate. Done. Okay, glad I got that off my chest. That was bothering me. I saw like 5 think pieces on it this weekend alone. Like, enough. He is an MVP candidate. Period. Yes, studs. Looked like you wanted to say something.
I was going to say, tell us how you really feel, man.
That's how I feel.
All right. Let's make it sure you're good.
Aurora and Matt. Hey, Matt, you're on The Score.
Hey, what's going on?
Nothing much. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to talk a little bit about Devin Hester. I totally agree with what you said earlier that he is the best, period. I remember watching him. Other team was kicking a field goal. I forget what team they were playing. I was like, why is Devin Hester out there? Like, what's going on? And the next thing I know, you see him miss the kick. Devin Hester takes it all the way back. I think the refs were even confused.
No, they weren't confused. It actually happened before. Remember with Nathan Vasher, he had done it wearing the orange, I believe, right? They're going to bring back the throwback orange this year for the Bears. 2005 with the wind blowing sideways was it Phil Nedney who tried to make that field goal and then Nathan Vasher? The best part of that play, if you look it up, Urlacher blocks like 4 guys. Like, he makes a block at like the 30. And then you see him again on the other 40. And then again at the 20. It's pretty crazy.
The whole defense was just mauling people the whole way down the field.
That defense was terrifying when they got the ball. They were looking to hurt you. And they knew they had returners. Herbie and I were looking at this before the show. Mike Brown has what? 8 touchdowns? Charles has 9? Like, those guys, when they would get the ball, it was yaha time. Hunter Hillenmeyer out there just trying to destroy someone. They loved it. Not to mention Urlacher and Briggs had touchdowns. It was what was really fun about that defense is how contagious it was. We got a little like fun last year with Eddie Jackson with his 2 touchdown returns. It was like boom, boom. But it seemed like every week those guys were doing something fun like that. Let me give you a little bit of baseball. As I was saying, the White Sox are doing something cool tonight. I saw this in the week, earlier in the week. There was a survivor of one of these plane crashes. Aero Mexico had a plane crash. And this guy, who was one of the people who survived, he's being interviewed by CBS, and he's wearing a White Sox cap. And so I tweeted out, I was like, hey, White Sox, you guys should have this guy come out and throw out the first pitch. Because who represents like that? Like, a White Sox fan survives a car crash. He's like, give me a tequila drink, and I got this White Sox cap on. It's so White Sox, it's great. And the White Sox are going to have him throw out the first pitch tonight. That's super cool. There's another White Sox thing I want to get to before I get back to the Cubs. The White Sox podcast. We've had the guys that host the White Sox podcast on the show. Chuck Gaughan and Ryan McGuffey. They did, and the episode is really worth your time if you're into podcasting. White Sox Talk Podcast is the name of it. They had Rick Hahn on their podcast. And I thought that he offered up something really interesting about Moncada. White Sox fans obviously frustrated that Moncada striking out. He's also striking out a lot looking. Here's what Hahn had to say about that.
I actually had a conversation with Todd Steverson a few weeks back. I said, look, my biggest fear about Moncada is he understandably gets so frustrated with getting punched out looking that he's going to start expanding, and he's going to start going out of the zone, and he's just finally going to get so pissed off that he's going to try to be a player he isn't and go away from his strengths. Again, when you have his raw material, his strength, his bat speed, his awareness of the zone, ultimately good things are going to happen as you swing and strikes. He starts deviating away from that, then he starts not being that same type of player. And Trick said to me, Todd Steverson said to me, he goes, look, he is frustrated, and he's talked about cleaning up a little bit. Yeah, screw this. I'm going to just start swinging at these things. And Todd said, but watch, he's not capable of doing it. He knows what a strike is. He knows that he can do damage on strikes. He's going to continue to take balls that are out of the zone. Now, he's going to pay the price from time to time. It's not perfect. He's going to pay the price. But the type of player he is at 23 in terms of that plate discipline, that's going to be a long-term strength for that guy. That's not the problem. That's not going to be a problem.
That's interesting. That the White Sox as an organization don't think that Moncada will chase out of the zone because he happens to be a more disciplined hitter than that. We shall see if that continues to be the case. If Moncada continues to be a disciplined hitter that understands where the strike zone is and whether or not he takes good pitches. So I thought that was cool. The White Sox Talk podcast, by the way, is the name of the podcast. You can search for it. Those guys do a great job on it. Let's go out to Rockford. Talk with Mike. Hey, Mike, you're on the score.
Hey, Lawrence, thanks. Good to hear you. I could not agree with you more on the Javi Baez bit. You know, nationally especially, you hear, you know, what a great tagger he is and how he makes some bonehead plays on the bases and how he's fixed his swing. He is flat out one of the best five baseball players going right now. He just does not get enough credit, and I really don't know why. Maybe because of Bryant, maybe because of Rizzo, maybe because of Lester, bigger names on the team. But he is in the top five in the major leagues right now and definitely an MVP candidate, if not maybe a lock.
I appreciate – I don't know about Locke. I mean, there's some players around the National League that are having great years. All I'm saying is that we're definitely not at a point where you need to question whether or not Javier Baez is a MVP candidate. His slash line is 300, 333, 585. He's a 918 player at this point in his career. That's an incredible jump. Last year, Baez had a really good year. He was a 796 OPS. He's now a 918 OPS. That's great work right there. Incredible work by him. But I appreciate you checking in. Did we just go off the air? Have we been off the air for like forever?
It was a couple, like 3 or 4 minutes, maybe.
So I just,
we're still on the stream, so that's all.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. There are still people who are listening on the stream.
Yeah.
So I can't, like, well, I guess I could go off. I could, because lightning must have hit the antenna.
We have a people fix on it. They're hopefully we'll be back soon.
Well, they better, because the Cubs game is coming up. We don't want to do that. I got a giveaway to give away and whatnot. I got to tell you about Hard Knocks coming back. How Baker Mayfield is not going to start. His coach has already said it. Oh, we're back. We're back for those of you listening on air. Hard Knocks comes back tomorrow night. You should check it out. I am actually really excited that it's the Cleveland Browns, because I think the Cleveland Browns have great stories so far this year. But you can check it out. Hard Knocks, you know what that means. That means that football is right around the corner if Hard Knocks is coming back. And the premiere episode with the Cleveland Browns is tomorrow. Tomorrow night at 9 o'clock our time. You know where to catch it out on HBO. And we're back, which is great. It's great because I have a prize to give away, and now people can actually hear it. If you're the sixth caller, 312-591-6700, we're going to give you a pair of tickets to see Kenny Wayne Shepherd Band on Friday, August 24th at Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo. Tickets are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Four Winds Casino, your entertainment escape. Yeah, thanks to the people that flipped over to the HD feed. It's good. It's helpful. If you got an HD feed, it's cool. By the way, radio.com is the only place where you can, like, listen now. Like, that's the app. So if you've been listening to other places, like, you got to get down with that app. Don't ask me why. I just know that that's what they said to me. Like, you got to tell them they can only get it from radio.com. So there. So if you missed a little portion of the show because we were snowy, I was just reiterating how Javier Baez has had an incredible year. And now I'm out of time. And he's a 918 OPS player. There's no debate about whether or not Javier Baez is an MVP candidate. If you were like, what happened to the Rick Hahn thing? I'll try and play it again tomorrow. But you should, at some point, if you're a White Sox fan, the White Sox Talk podcast is really good. And that their sit down with Rick was incredible. I think you'll get something out of it. Have an incredible night. Cubs baseball is next as they take on the Kansas City Royals. I'll be back at 6 tomorrow. Check out my column on 670thescore.com. And there will be a new episode of the House of L podcast that drops tomorrow, all about my trip to Canton. So make sure you check that out. Peace. Cubs baseball's next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.